Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 198. We're getting close to 200. I'm going to have some information on that for you in the outro as well. But welcome to episode 198 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again. My voice was blown out after I traveled, and it's just barely hanging on, coming back and hanging on right now. So you'll have to bear with me through that. But this is going to be a fascinating episode. It's a mega episode. It's going to be very long, but for good reason. So I need to kind of give you this background before we continue. The intention of this episode was supposed to be a Remembrance Day episode where I wanted to kind of leave a lot of the politics out because I've got a couple of phenomenal interviews to share with you in this episode, and we are. But then there's a whole bunch of politics going on that is extremely impactful to all Canadians. So Wilson and I have to cover it. So it's going to be a long one, but it's going to be incredibly engaging. So we're going to start it off with two interviews with two different Canadian veterans. The first one's going to be Jen Godden from Veteran Hunters. This is an organization based primarily out of Alberta that takes veterans of either military or first responders who are suffering from PTSD or other issues, takes them on outdoor adventures, hunting or fishing or whatever. And it's been very successful. And it's just a great story. It really is. So that's the first interview I'm going to show. The second interview, another Canadian veteran, Chris Kopp, who's the CEO of CTOMS, the company that's been supporting the CCFR Radio Podcast for how long now? Like, it's been years, right? Well, Chris, I'd met Chris a little while back. And I don't know, like 6 months ago kind of thing. And he had told me how his business started. And I was like, what? Like, that it was a crazy story. I'm like, could you ever come to Chilliwack, British Columbia and do an interview so we can, you know, I can tell people about your story? And he's like, absolutely. And he did a week and a half ago. It was the night before I left to go do to travel to Lloydminster, Alberta to do the Sean Newman podcast, to do a meet and greet for Customer Appreciation Day at our friends over at Profit River Firearms. And then we did kind of a charity shoot as well when we were out there in Lloydminster. And I lost my voice when I came home. So anyway, Chris had come, flew in for this and flew back home all on the same day. And we did our 7-minute interview, which I'm going to show you right after Jen's. And I'm super busy, so I can only keep so much in my head. Well, after we did that interview, I'm like, you know, I got told the story of the friendly fire incident in the opening weeks or months of the Afghanistan war in 2002, where an American F-16 dropped a 500-pound laser-guided bomb on 3rd Battalion PPCLI, right? Our guys that were doing a night training exercise and killed 4 of our guys and wounded 8. And it's a pretty dark piece of Canadian military history. And Chris Kopp was there on the ground treating guys. He was there when the bomb fell, right? And I'm like, man, that's an incredible story. And what a great story of sacrifice to be told and appreciated on Remembrance Day. So anyway, I've got Chris's interview, but when he was here, he was recounting in detail the story of the Tarnak Farm incident. And I was like, I hate to ask you, but would you be okay with our audience hearing the full story, your firsthand account? And then a lot of the takeaways that have helped you change the Canadian military's training to better respond to situations, like to take the lessons learned on that day, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to be sensitive about all this stuff, right? So he said that he'd be willing to do that. So the reason why I'm telling you this is you're going to see the 7-minute interview that he did for our television show. But on Remembrance Day, on November 11th, we're going to be releasing the 22-minute interview where he recounts that the whole incident, and his, from his perspective, and it's really an impactful video. So I'm reminding you once now to stay tuned to all of our social media platforms for the release of that interview on November the 11th. And when you watch it, if you find it as impactful as I did, please share it and get other people to watch it. Because I think in today's day and age where we're getting so much information, we're just getting bombarded by it. We're getting fire hosed with it. And so many things going wrong, right, in our society that we forget important things. And one of the most important things is Remembrance Day and remember why we have to remember it, right? So anyway, important stuff. I think things that have been going on and on and on for so many years, we're just like, yeah, I know what's going on. And then you push it aside. But a lot of people paid the ultimate price for us to still be in the fight today. So anyway, okay. Once these two interviews are done, I'm going to bring Wilson on. And as I mentioned, Ottawa's on fire. There's some really bad things going on right now. If you haven't heard, you're going to hear it from us. And so that has to do with Budget 2025. It has to do with floor crossings. It also continues on with more cops ganging up with the Carney feds, the Carney liberals, ganging up against law-abiding gun owners and getting on side with the feds in this gun confiscation program. Like, wild that anyone would even entertain this, but they're doing it. So there's some more people jumping on side with the feds. Want to talk about that. Cape Breton, the pilot program is pushing forward. We even have a little bit of video for that. You've probably seen it already if you've been following our social media platforms. But then we have a turn for the better. We do have some good news. Good news coming out of Yukon and also out of Saskatchewan. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then I have some important information, and that'll be it with Wilson, but I have some important information to share with you in the outro. So all that to say, I mean, this is like a 7-minute introduction, but there is a lot of information in this podcast. So make sure that you share it with people. Make sure you watch it all the way through. There's important things happening in Canada right now. And of course, these two interviews that I've done with these veterans, I've been impacted by them. So anyway, I wanted to share them with you. All right. All that and more, the CCFR Radio Podcast starts right now. Thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly 2 decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. So for anyone that doesn't know you, you are Chris Kopp, and you own a business in Edmonton called CTOMS. And so there's an interesting story that we have coming up, but you're a longtime CCFR supporter, so I really appreciate that. Thank you. And I wanted to give our audience an opportunity here. The interesting story that I heard when we met. So we'll talk about your business real quick and then how you started your business. So
for sure.
Just like a minute or so, just an introduction of the business itself.
Yeah. So the business, we started as a training company. We provide tactical medical training, primarily to military law enforcement. There's an online component where just the general public can attend the didactic component online, and then the physical practical stuff is done on contract with military and law enforcement.
So, okay. And you also provide medical supplies as well.
Sure.
As part of your business and some other things that you got going.
Yeah. So wholesale and retail of medical equipment. So things like tourniquets, hemostatic dressings, something that, you know, guys would stock what they call their IFAC or their individual first aid kit with. And then we dabble in like the rope rescue and just some generic tactical gear as well.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So now, the story of how you originally started in the military, And then you ended up starting this business. Just tell us a little bit about how that story happened.
Yeah. So the genesis of the company is really from, stems back to my military career. So I joined the Army right out of high school, and I joined the infantry. And it was a time where, you know, I went to Bosnia a couple of times, but it wasn't really exciting. So I wanted to make the next step. Where am I going to go? And I had my eyes on search and rescue technician, which was a very competitive trade to get into. So to pad my application, I went to EMR and EMT school and just got a medical background. And then I got accepted to selection, but I ended up getting deployed to Afghanistan before I went to selection as the infantry Chris or Corporal Cop before the trade change. So in Afghanistan, you'll remember it was the very first four casualties of Canadian casualties of the war. And it was the friendly fire incident where the American F-16 pilot accidentally purposely, but misidentified us and dropped a 500-pound bomb on my platoon and killed four of the guys and wounded eight. So because I had the medical background, I ended up treating some of my friends that night, providing medical treatment. And then afterwards, I realized, you know, this isn't really, we weren't properly trained, properly equipped. I was made aware of some doctrine that the Americans were using. And I thought, man, this should be implemented, you know, in the Canadian military. So we started this grassroots thing to start that up while I was in. And then I ended up going search and rescue technician. I ended up a couple of years into that having to get a surgery done. So while I'm on my couch, I incorporated this little hobby company with the intent of doing a side hustle, if you mm-hmm. will, to bring the training that we had created in the Army intended for the military. I'm like, the law enforcement can benefit from this significantly. And the company kind of took off, and I had to make a decision whether I stay in the military or get out. And hardest decision of my life, I ended up getting out, and the rest is history. So here we are 20 years later.
So you that was a turning point in your life when you experienced such a dramatic event where yeah. you have so many people in need of care all at the same time. And then, of course, things have changed,
yes.
you know, techniques and responses have changed over time as well. So
completely,
you know, maybe things could have turned out better had people had a certain level of training. And
yeah, I don't know if they would have turned out better. I think the lessons happened for a reason. Nobody necessarily died because of, you know, equipment shortages or errors, but the lessons were hard learned. And so the tourniquet that went on one of the guys, there wasn't such thing as a manufactured arterial tourniquet at the time. It was an IV tourniquet, but the training let us down was that we didn't know the difference. And this was, you know, we had put an IV tourniquet on an arterial bleed. What saved him was proximity to the hospital, to the combat hospital. But the lesson was still there. I mean, that hits you pretty hard as to what could have happened if you had been further out. And so it was those lessons. I'm like, man, you know, I don't want anybody to be put in the position that I was put in. I want all the information and all the equipment out there.
And so we're talking about a different kind of medicine, not just, you know, whatever, urban ambulance.
This is in high threat
environments.
Yeah.
And so it's a different type of medicine with some different focuses, but you do have an aspect of your business that's available. If people want to learn about that because they're interested, because these are good skills to have, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a way they can do that through your business too.
Yeah. So we run CTOMS Academy, which is our online training medium, and that's available to absolutely everybody. And what it does is it teaches the same depth, which is a much deeper level of first aid training than you would take in a normal first aid course. And so it teaches people how to deal with the real trauma, the knife attacks, the gunshot wounds, the bear attacks, the severe trauma, not just the little cuts and scrapes and
limbs. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. So I guess if we were going to wrap it up, so we're running out of time in a television format. You've been a long time supporter of the CCFR, and I was just wondering,
if you want to share with us what, why have you supported us so long?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, from a company perspective, it's because we are reaching the demographic. I think firearms owners are generally prepared citizens, and that's who we want to reach out and think would benefit from this type of training. And just from a personal perspective, you know, I've been carrying a gun since I was 9. I had a pellet gun at first, you know, on my family farm, and then I went to the 22, and then I went into the Army. So firearms have always been near and dear to part of my life, for sure.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate the help. And we've still got a lot of work to do, unfortunately. I'd like to say that the work's all been done, but we're going to stay at it. And again, really appreciate all your assistance and for being here today.
Thank you very much, Rod.
Awesome. All right, we're back. And in the studio, we have a special guest today, Jen Godin from Veteran Hunters. She runs the women's program over there. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I thank you for being here. So we don't have a lot of time on television, obviously. So what's most important is tell us about your organization and what you guys do.
So the Veteran Hunters takes veterans, current military and first responders and correctional out into hunting and fishing adventures to find healing from trauma.
Okay. And what's do you have a lot of veterans taking advantage of your program?
As of right now, we've had roughly 435 participants.
Holy smokes.
Since our inception in 2019.
That's a lot of people.
It is.
It's a lot of help.
It is, and it's growing, and we can't take everyone out that has applied because we do need some volunteer help, as we are a volunteer, self-funded, raised through donations.
So you have some corporations that are helping you, and these are good corporations. So why don't we make sure that we mention them?
Vortec Canada is, of course, huge. They have been with us since the beginning. Also, Bass Pro is a huge sponsor as well. But we are looking for some other sponsors to help our veterans get out.
Okay, so how did you get involved in this organization yourself?
I've been with the organization for 2 years now. I was originally a participant that had never hunted before. I'm a veteran myself, and I was looking for the camaraderie that I had lost and the support from people that actually understood what it was like to be a veteran with PTSD. So since then, we've started the female program, which does hunting and fishing for our female veterans and first responders.
All right. And you ended up receiving a lot of help from the organization.
Yes. If it wasn't for this organization, I honestly don't think I would be here speaking with you today.
Okay. So you served.
Yes.
And you sacrificed a little for that.
I did. I'm a bit of a different case just because I joined the Canadian Forest Reserve at the age of 16. And then transferred into Reg Force shortly thereafter. I served till about 2014, and I couldn't keep going. I had a family, and everything just kind of hit all at once. So I left thinking that that would fix things, and it didn't. It opened up a whole new level of hurt that I thought that I didn't have. I thought that I had stuffed it deep down, and it finally all came to the surface, and I lost myself. And trying to be a mom, a wife, I couldn't keep things together. So the Veteran Hunters, the founder Todd, spent a lot of time with me, helping me find my happiness again. And with that, I can be there for my kids. I can be there for my husband. And I have a smile again at the end of the day.
So a lot of people have been through what you've been through.
I think a lot more than people know.
Yeah.
Especially with the PTSD or PTSI diagnosis, it's not a visible injury. So we look completely normal on the outside, but they don't know the darkness that we face day to day.
Yeah. Now, you're not getting any public or any government funding. This is all funded from people who are donating, and you're all volunteer.
Yes.
At this point.
We are all volunteers. So all the hunter hosts, anybody that helps in the organization is volunteer. They're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts to either help their brother and sisters, or we do have civilian volunteers that do step up to help us help the people that have served our country.
So you're based in Alberta, right?
Yes.
But you're sort of, you're expanding. You have people across the country, correct?
Yes, we have BC, I have to think here, BC, Quebec, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Newfoundland. And we're looking for to expand into the other provinces so we can help truly coast to coast.
Well, it sounds like you're building up the organization. Sounds like it's doing something that's really, really necessary. And it also, I mean, I've had a few conversations, right? I didn't serve myself. But it seems like the government is not taking a proper approach to helping our veterans after they've given everything that they could give to the country.
That is correct. And we've even have participants that have been offered the maid service through Veteran Affairs Canada. And our government is turning their backs on the people that have served to protect us. And that's not just your military, that's your RCMP, your firefighters, your paramedics. We deal with everybody under that umbrella.
Yeah. So this is probably a little better of an approach, wouldn't you say?
It is. And the power of nature is a wonderful thing. And they just need to find that quiet. And if the people listening could actually see what it is to have a veteran out in nature, and the rapid change that we see is truly amazing.
The healing.
Yes.
Yeah. That's amazing. So if people want to find out what your organization does, maybe how they can get help themselves or how they can support the organization, which is probably a good thing to do. If I can be so bold as to say, mm-hmm. Where can they find you?
They
guys?
Can find us on the web at theveteranhunters.com. We do have Facebook and Instagram as well if they want to follow even more.
So they get to know the organization a lot better by going there and also by following you guys on social media, obviously.
Yes.
So the Facebook is fairly well attended.
Yes.
Facebook page. Is that your main social media?
Yes. And then it does link into Instagram as well.
Okay. Awesome. Well, really appreciate you coming to tell us about your organization. Sounds like something that everybody should get behind. And thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We are back and I've got Ms. Tracy Wilson from the CCFR. Wilson.
You sound like a 12-year-old boy. What's going on
well,
there?
Well, I have a lot of changes happening right now. So, I got strep throat or something from traveling. I lost mm-hmm. my voice for a few days. Mrs. Giltacco was happy about that probably, but
probably.
It's been a real struggle. But anyway, before we get started, because we got a lot of stuff to go through, there's stuff mm-hmm. exploding everywhere right now. It's nuts. So we got a fair bit of bad news and we got a little bit of good news to kind of end that off. That's how we're going to structure it at least. But I do want to thank profusely Jen Godden from Veteran Hunters for coming on. It was an excellent conversation and they have an excellent organization as well, doing a lot of great work. And I also want to thank Chris Kopp from CTOMS Inc., not only for his support of the CCFR for so long, but for his service and sharing his story with everyone. And let me just mention one more thing. Sorry.
That's okay.
And I'm going to mention it again in the outro is when Chris was here, we started talking about his experience of being there at the Tarnak Farm incident, right? Where the friendly fire incident mm-hmm. During the opening of the Afghanistan war. And Chris was willing to share a firsthand account of the entire day. And it's not something I wanted him to do, but he was willing to do it. So we did it. And it is a phenomenal interview. I think it's about 22 minutes long. That interview is coming up. I edited it yesterday and it's fantastic. And it's coming up. We're going to release it on Remembrance Day, right? November 11th. So keep your eye on the CCFR Facebook page, on the YouTube account, as well as Rumble and Facebook and everywhere else. We're going to spread that interview around. But if it is 22 minutes, very well spent. So anyway, I just want to get that stuff out of the way.
Awesome.
Now, you saw that and I sent a link to the interview yesterday. Like, what did you think of it?
I thought it was really impactful. As you know, I come from a big military family, and Colin served. He's actually got some connection to some of the same people as Chris. He would not watch it with me. However, I watched it. It was very impactful. My brother also served in that war, and many of my family members. So, yeah, I was kind of glued to it. And he really told it in a way that made you feel like you could really understand what they went through. So, yeah, thanks to Jen and to Chris for their service, and to all those who served and those who still do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it was, I haven't done a lot of conversations in the studio like I did for those two interviews. So that was a little bit of a new experience for me, but I'm actually quite grateful for that experience, to be honest.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. It was a really nice interview.
Okay. So we had plans for this to just be the Remembrance Day episode, and we just take it easy with the rest of the stuff. And it was great. It was like being a little little dream world for a while. But unfortunately, the people who are working not so quietly behind the scenes to undermine basically everything have been working overtime. And man, there's a lot going on. So you and I agreed we would front load this section, do all the bad news first. And there's a fair bit of it. Then there might be a few laughs in there somewhere. And then we've got some good news at the end, because there are some good things happening. And then I've got, you know, after we're done with all this, I've got the outro and I've got some encouraging messaging for everybody. So anyway, let's get started. Tear the Band-Aid off with the bad news first. So the bad news starts, this whole story starts with budget 2025.
Yeah, that's right. So at the time of recording, yesterday was budget day here in the nation's capital. And, you know, you'll think back to when Freeland resigned during the last budget. That was a $65 billion deficit budget. It was enough to trigger a really weird, you know, series of events that happened. She resigned, that led to Trudeau resigning. He prorogued Parliament. We ended up in an election. There was an election upset. And now we've got our new elbows up. Prime Minister and Freeland's back in cabinet and all that's going on. Well, Carney just blasted through that $65 billion deficit ceiling with an $80 billion deficit, which is actually $130 billion deficit, because he divided it into operational spending and capital investment. Of course, Liberals like to play some fun Liberal math, and they consider spending to be investment. Now, he promised Canadians this would be an austerity budget, yet there's $141 billion in new spending. And the total spend, get a hold of this, is a staggering $581 billion, the highest in the history of the country. Now, fun fact, the Liberals are actually going to spend more in this budget on their war on legal gun owners and our legal guns than they are on Operation Reassurance, which is our mission in Latvia, securing the border, and hiring all those CBSA agents combined. They're going to spend more fighting us than they are all of that. Now, every budget vote is automatically a non-confidence vote. You don't get a choice in that. And people were maybe worried that if the opposition parties didn't support the budget, that we would be plunged into a Christmas election, which I'm sure Mark Carney wouldn't have minded that at all. But have no fear. He has come up with a plan B for that. And he has begun courting disgruntled conservative MPs to come over to the Liberal side. And yesterday there was news during the announcement for the budget that he has, in fact, already been successful with one MP in particular. And that's Chris D'Entremont from Acadie, Annapolis in Nova Scotia. So he has crossed the floors to the Liberals. And if you're asking who is this guy, you may recognize him, because in the last parliamentary session, we had Greg Ferguson was the Speaker of the House, but there was a deputy speaker, and that was Chris D'Entremont. That comes with a $50,000 bonus, some other, you know, stuff that's included in that, some benefits. Excuse me. And Chris wanted that again. So in this new parliament, he had ran for it. And this is a position that is voted on by your colleagues from all parties. However, he's not entitled to it, and he didn't win it. Tom Comeck won it, a different conservative MP, and Chris has been upset ever since. So yesterday during the budget announcement, he decided that was a fine time to abandon the banner of the conservatives that he just ran under 6 months ago for the third time, was elected by his constituents to come to Ottawa and represent their interests. And yeah, he has crossed over. So he joined them this morning at the Liberal caucus meeting, and they welcomed him with a big round of applause, and there was hugs and kisses. And yeah, so Carney now sits two seats away from gaining a majority that he did not earn through election by the people.
Well, the whole thing is quite interesting. So Carney, instead of going to an election, he's going to backroom deal his way to a majority government in Canada. And
we'll open this place up so you can see what's going on, hold us accountable, and contribute more directly to what happens here. We'll shift power away from the back rooms to make sure your MP will be your voice here in Ottawa instead of Harper's voice in your community.
You know, it's funny. I never want to be hypocritical, right? Because it's such a disgusting human trait. But if you think about it, it's like we cheered on a floor crossing a number of years ago, right? It was Leona Osliff,
yeah,
who crossed over from the Liberals to the Conservatives. And of course we cheered that on because it was great. That was another seat for Conservatives, but it is different. And
it is different.
I think we can kick back and forth why.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, it was different because number one, the Conservatives were never within striking distance of a majority. Like that's a completely different situation. Number two, floor crossing used to happen and it wasn't as big a deal because back then in those days, and even when Osliff did it, right? It was, politics was a lot more nuanced. It wasn't like, here's one party literally setting the country on fire and destroying our children's future. And I know that sounds like an extreme thing to say, but I can explain myself easily for that. Mm-hmm. It's, all of these people know, like Chris, I don't even really understand his last name, so I'll just call him the Chris Crosser because he crosses the floor without even a passing thought about all the people who helped him get reelected, and it was a close election. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a government in the situation where the interest payments on the national debt are $4 billion a month before this budget. $4 billion dollars per month in interest that has to come out of tax revenue and other revenue before you pay for a single service. This is one of the reasons I got to really be careful because I could go off on this for like 15 minutes. I don't want to do that, but it's amazing to me how people don't understand. They want more services. They want more services and they want more spending. It's the spending that makes it to the point where at some point you won't have any services. And for some reason, people can't understand that. So you have a government that is now $55 billion, which has surpassed the amount of money that the federal government pays for medical, medical trans, healthcare transfers to provinces. We are spending more money on interest payments on the debt than on the entire federal medical system, healthcare system. That's where we are today, much less after a year of this budget, right? So you have that. Chris knows this. Chris Crosser knows this. Same thing with any other conservative MP that's thinking about crossing the floor. We have our country is now aligning with China against the United States of America. And I don't know why anybody thinks that the U.S. will tolerate that for any length of time. You have censorship laws. You have hate speech laws that are wildly subjective. You have corruption like we've never seen before. You have massive firearm prohibitions and confiscations only from licensed gun owners. Like, man, this is not rocket science. People like Chris Crosser know this. So there's a deal been made somewhere. That's my assumption. There's money in a foreign account. And by the way, Carney is an expert in moving money around in foreign jurisdictions. Like, that's literally, he's an expert at it. So God knows what these people are. Like, this is, and I, and you know this, Wilson, because we talk about it a lot. I like to be careful with my words. I don't like to throw around really wild statements, but this, I don't know. This is traitorous stuff. So, man, I don't know who else is going to decide to take the deal, but it's not a good situation for anybody. I don't think it's going to be a good situation in the medium term for liberals.
Well, and you're right. Like, I also cheer-led when Leon Alice lived cross, but that was back in 2018. It was 3 years into the liberal mandate. There was a distinct shift in policy, in this stoking of hatred and division. Excuse me. It was a very different situation. This guy just ran under the conservative banner, under Polly Ev's banner, 6 months ago. A month ago, he stood up in the House of Commons and said that people in his constituency, in his riding, were, you know, starving and homeless and all these things. Nothing has changed for that in the last month. I got a message actually from a gun owner. Matt Cazera is a good friend of mine on Facebook. And you'll remember that during the last election, we encouraged gun owners to get involved. You know, that's the democratic process. Excuse me, get out there and help your firearm friendly candidates, volunteer, try and do what you can. And Matt did exactly that. He went out there, he took time off work, he door knocked for this guy, he handed out literature, he pounded in signs, you know, he put all his effort into this guy who ran three times for the conservatives and even got like a handwritten thank you note at the end of it from the MP. And he sent me a message yesterday and he said, "Tracy, I've never felt so used. I worked my butt off to get him that seat. There was only a difference of 500 votes. It was a very close election." And then he gives it away. How the heck do we move forward from here? And he sent me some pictures working on the campaign. And I think, well, that's right. I mean, if you voted for this guy, you might be angry. If you volunteered for this guy, it's like a slap in the face. You know, it takes a lot of people and a lot of money. People donate money. It takes about $100,000 to $140,000 to run the campaign. People invested in him under the conservative banner. And I get it that Leona had that too. But it was 3 years into a mandate with a distinct shift in policy. This was 6 months after an election. He knew exactly who the leader is, knows exactly what the policies are, spoke against the Liberal government a month ago, and now is being an opportunist. So there's some rumors floating around here in Ottawa that there's up to three other conservative MPs who are being courted by Carney right now. I noticed yesterday Chris Crosser's social media kind of went dark and there was some rumors swirling around on Twitter. And next thing you know, there was the announcement put out and it's been, you know, just a train wreck ever since. And there are some other conservative MPs that I noticed, at least one, that his social media has gone dark. So I don't know. I don't know where we stand here, what's going on. But Carney said in a press conference this morning, he needs that majority by Christmas. And at this rate, I'm worried he may get it. And I don't know what that spells out for Polyev, for his leadership. He's going to face a leadership question at convention in January. You know, yesterday I would have called you a fool if you said it would be anything but a conservative lens or a Polyev landslide. But I don't know. I guess things are up in the air and maybe by the next podcast, we'll know a little more on this. But it's a moving situation here in Ottawa, very fluid. And I don't know. I guess we know exactly what somebody's integrity is worth, and that would be $50,000. So,
yeah. Well, so you're saying $50,000 because the deputy speaker gets
MP, a $50,000 top up.
And he didn't
get that.
This might be some good information. We've covered this kind of stuff before, but when you're an MP in Ottawa, you're at, I think about $209,000
for a backbencher.
So we'll round up $1,000. So $210,000. Yeah. And your pension, you only have to serve 6 years to get a pension to begin with, but your pension amount is based on your best 5 years. So if you've been in politics for 15 years, they'll find, you know, where did you make the most money? Take the average of those 5 years and you're going to get 60% of that. Now think about that for a second. I know this is a lot of information, but it's good that people know this stuff. The more you know, the better, right? So if you are making $51,000 a year more because mm-hmm. you've been deputy speaker, that dramatically affects your pension. You're talking about $260,000, over $250,000 a year. And your pension is based on 60% of that.
Yes.
These people are making out like bandits on this pension.
Sure they are.
And this pension actually used to be far better. Harper had the guts back. And I used to criticize Harper, actually. But Harper, back in the day, he actually lowered all the pensions. And he took a lot of flack for it. And that's where he lowered them too. So everybody was complaining because their pension got lowered. And now, you know, even as it sits, because the MP pay has gone up and up and up, these people are still making a really great living without having to work later. So anyway, a lot of this is all aimed at trying to get Polyev out of the leader seat. And
That's exactly what it's about.
You know, nobody's perfect. Like nobody is. Is Carney a perfect leader? Absolutely not. He's terrifying, actually. But Polyev has been really consistent. He's not intimidated by the media. He's not intimidated by the government. You know, he's a sharp guy.
He takes a position and defends it.
Yes.
And that's
right.
He sticks to it.
So it's, you know, everyone wants to, you're always picking on the guy that's in the arena, right? The guy that's in the center doing the fighting. Everyone always wants to pile on. It's a weird kind of human thing. You know, we experience it ourselves, right? But it's interesting. A lot of this is all trying to remove him. And you wonder why. And politics is a win at all cost game. So everybody's nervous. It's like, well, if not, but my question is, if not Polyev, who?
That's right.
Who is it?
Then who?
So do they fight to keep him? You know, do they run a leadership race? I don't know. It's a really quickly evolving situation. And it is it's a crap sandwich for anyone that's like, I want my kids to have a future in this country. It's anyway, but wait, the hits just keep coming. There was a video that that our social media guys had floated around. It was a town council meeting in Nelson, British Columbia, where the chief of police for Nelson Police, Donovan Fisher, basically is overjoyed to do Mark Carney's dirty work for him and seize guns and facilitate a buyback in Nelson from exclusively licensed gun owners.
Yeah, and apparently he's speaking on behalf of the British Columbia Chief of Police Association. You know, it's a very marked difference from the other Western provinces. You've got Alberta, Saskatchewan, likely Yukon, stacking up behind gun owners and supporting law-abiding citizens and focusing on crime instead. And here in BC, you know, they've got, well, they're in BC, they've got this police chief, Donovan Fisher, saying that he's more than happy to do it. And what's interesting is he was having some questions from city councilors who were asking him, how is this going to work and what's it look like? And, you know, he was talking about what it could possibly look like to have gun owners, you know, turning in or having their firearms confiscated, turning them in. Like, what is the difference? And they were talking about gun owners, you know, pulling up with firearms. And actually, they were laughing at the prospect of gun owners might get shot, right? You do roll into a police station with a firearm. They're probably not going to like that, right? And yeah, I just thought, like, it's just interesting to me. So my suggestion is to the people, the good people of British Columbia, get a hold of your city councilors. The municipal police forces are beholden to the municipal government, so your city council. And usually there's some kind of police board that is formed by members of the city council. Get in there, ask to go and speak to them. Ask to have a meeting with your city councilors and say, I don't want my municipal tax dollars going towards targeting licensed gun owners who've done nothing to warrant it. I want my money and my law enforcement agencies focused on reducing crime, violence, and gun smuggling, not gun ownership. So, yeah, just a sick little video.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, my question to people like Donovan Fisher and others is, at what point do you say no? At what point are you going to be like, I'm not doing that because that's not right? It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, there are people out there that will literally do anything for money. Because it's what it's about for people like that. Well, or their yes. sadistic tendencies that we don't see from their outwards appearances. But they're doing it for like, oh, well, the feds are going to pay us. You know, I forget what the rumor was, how much per gun. I don't know. Was it $250 or something like that for police?
Well, they're giving these
lump sum
amounts. It was $108,000 that they gave to Cape Breton, a very small jurisdiction. But I think Winnipeg Police Force, I think they gave them $2 million. So they're giving a lot of money. I don't know if it's based per gun, but there's been talk of a variety of different methods of payment. But I don't know. If you need more funding, there's all kinds of ways to get it. I don't know, man.
It's an interesting time in Canadian history. But anyway, now let's go to something interesting and then some good news. Because, man, that was enough bad news for a little while.
I know.
So the idea of a backroom dealing as a result of backroom dealing, a liberal majority is pretty scary to me. So anyway, let's move on.
Me too.
So there was a video sent to you of mm-hmm. a drive-through in Cape Breton of basically a drive-through approach to people turning in guns there. So just give us kind of the synopsis of that whole thing.
So our good friend Jeff McNeil from the Port Morian Wildlife Association, you'll remember he was the organizer of the little rally we did out there. And Jeff and I have become quite good friends. So he sent me some footage and he wanted to go see, like, now that they're into the stage of actually, you know, supposedly collecting firearms, what does that even look like, you know? So he drove over to the Cape Breton Regional Police Services building and they built this weird thing out of barricades. It puts you in mind of like a cattle corral, you know, you turn and drive and it guides you along. And the idea is that you would, I guess, pre-warn the police you're coming. Maybe they'd give you a time slot. You would drive through this drive-through thing and roll up, and then a cop would come out and take the firearms out of your vehicle. You don't even get out of your car. So it's like a drive-through drop-off. And then apparently they're storing them in a 24x24 garage out back behind the building, you know, storing the guns barrel down in green bins. It just sounds insane to me. But it's also my understanding that the feds are sort of giving them extra money for this. And that they will also pay them for the costs associated with the rally we did out there. You'll remember, I think we talked about it on a previous episode, that on the day of the rally, they closed the police station, like, you know, some kind of public safety, you know, concern. They closed the police station to the public and then hired private security guards to come and guard the parking lot and the entrances to keep the police safe from us rally people. They also had a attack team across the road. All this stuff costs a lot of money. There was a drone that flew above us, recorded everything the entire time for 5 hours. None of this stuff is cheap. It costs a lot of money. And it's our understanding that the feds are paying for all that stuff too. So mm-hmm. very slow rollout, which I'm celebrating their incompetence. But yeah, it's just this weird, creepy thing going on. And Jeff took a little drive through there. Of course, now they've got some cameras up and they probably don't like him poking around. But yeah, it's like a drive through drop off for your firearms. Now, he didn't see anybody actually doing it. So I guess we'll see. There's all kinds of ATIPs filed, both federally and municipally, to find out what's being spent on this, how many guns have been turned in. Is it even working? And I guess we'll find out some news on that rather soon. But yeah, drive-through drop-offs.
Yeah. And just a kind of a sidebar is that we've looked around for this rumor, you know, that there were 30 guns turned in or at least registered or whatever. And I can't find any information about that. And it was a rumor that was kind of floated out there by a few people. It would be great if that was true, but that's still in my opinion, still unconfirmed, but that was just kind of a sidebar.
Oh, it's absolutely unconfirmed. Yeah.
Okay. Now for the good news. And there is some good news to celebrate. UConn held a provincial, or UConn. Sorry, a territorial election night before last. And they have overwhelmingly elected a conservative-oriented government, the Yukon Party. And this is a party that has promised to mirror legislation like Saskatchewan and Alberta to try to protect gun owners from the feds coming in and confiscating their firearms. So, and it wasn't a, it was a landslide win. It was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So they decimated the Liberals down to just one seat. The Liberals were the longtime governing party there. And there's a lot of gun owners who did a lot of work. Our friends, DJ, Donovan, like everybody's been working really hard on this. And yeah, it's pretty awesome. Curry ended up with a majority government for the Yukon Party. Apparently there's some sort of firearms act coming out or some sort of legislative tool that they're going to use similar to what Alberta and Saskatchewan has done to try and protect Yukon firearms owners. And we'd support that 100%. So we're always ready and willing and able to help in any way possible. But yeah, it is really nice to see that for the Yukon. And congratulations to everybody involved. Just a massive undertaking and a huge win. Huge win.
Yeah. Great work, everyone, for doing that. That's fantastic. And we need those little victories to keep us going.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I just want to mention is I did a video. It's like, I think it's a week and a half ago now on legislation that Saskatchewan is coming out with and an explanation of what it is that they're trying to do and why. It's actually really, really good. And it's an insightful thing. Who knows whether it'll work or not, but it's looking good for now. So make sure that if you're not sure what Saskatchewan is doing for gun owners, I believe the video is called What Saskatchewan is Doing for Gun Owners, I think, if I remember correctly. But make sure that you watch it because it's really important to stay informed about certain things like that. Now, if what Saskatchewan is doing, if that works, then the CCFR will launch a project to make sure that every provincial government is provided with an ultimatum. Do what Saskatchewan is doing, because that's the least you can do to protect your citizens. It's not actually trying to stop the gun buyback program. It's only trying to make sure that everyone gets paid. And the fact that if the feds are confronted with the fact that they will have to pay everyone that turns guns in, that in itself may slow
They'll
this whole
it.
Roll
They'll have
to get us out of this time period and maybe into the next one. So anyway, I would highly recommend watching that video because it's important to know what's going on. All right.
Yes.
I think we covered everything. It's been like half an hour. So it was a very long episode, but I think we covered everything. I appreciate the update, and we're just going to keep on pounding over here.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to keep doing this stuff. This is what we're doing, and it doesn't really matter what they throw at us. We have no alternative but to fight, because giving in to these people has never been an option for us.
Well, so. you can't do that, because if you give up, you're gonna lose faith in everything, and then what does your life look like, right? So
that's right.
Got to keep fighting. All right. Thanks for the update, and we'll see you in the next one.
We'll see you then.
All right. That was quite an episode, wasn't it? For a variety of different reasons. Unbelievable. I think this is one of the better episodes that we've ever done just because of some of the content. Anyway, all right. But it's not over yet. We have a lot of stuff to go through, and it's important information that I have for you. Number one, episode 200 is coming up, the episode after next, right? This is episode 198. Typically, I just don't even care about stuff like that because we have other things to do. But if you notice, we didn't say a word about the CCFR turning 10 at the end of October. So our 10th anniversary and episode 200th, we're going to combine them and we're going to do something special. Tracy Wilson has to come to the Lower Mainland for a couple of different reasons. But one of them is while she's here, Tracy and I are going to do episode 200 in person in the studio here. I'm pointing over here because that's actually where all the interviews happen, right? Like the ones you just saw. And it's probably going to be an hour long episode. And we're going to recount this journey of the CCFR from an idea in Tracy Wilson's living room back in 2015 to where we are today. Now, where we are today politically is a living nightmare. Okay. I'll just say it, tell it the way it is. It is. But you also, when you're dealing with things like that, you also have to take a few minutes and just go, hey, you know what? Look, What is positive here? What's pretty cool? And I'll tell you what, the story of the CCFR, going from just that idea of a bunch of people, I wasn't there, but a bunch of people in somebody's living room, to the things that we've done today, is an incredible story on its own. And just the firearms community supporting this vision and doing all the things that we've done. And it won't be just about, hey, remember when we did this, remember when we did that. This will be a really interesting walk down memory lane over the last decade of the change that we've seen, you know, like in the firearms community, the change that we've seen politically, the reaction to some of our projects, the things that we've been through as individuals. It's going to be an interesting episode. I'm hoping it'll be one of the coolest episodes we've ever done, because we have this tool of the interview studio, right? So there'll be lots of B-roll. We might even have some, you know, videos sent in by other people. It's going to be interesting. I have some ideas. So I'm hoping to make it super, super cool to watch. And at least, if anything, I know politics is very dark right now, but if you just look at this organization and the things that we've been able to do, everyone should be pretty proud of that. You know, despite the result, because we can't control everything, obviously. The Liberals have been fully in charge for 10 years. And elbows up Canadians have made that happen. And I can't control that. We can just, all I can control is us to continue to keep fighting. The story of the CCFR is pretty wild. We've done some pretty crazy things. And we've really pulled together as a community to make that happen. So anyway, I want to share that story with you. I'm in talks with WOW TV. I'm sort of saying this out of turn because I haven't heard back from Scott over there. I want our TV episode it would be the 200th on the podcast, but it's episode 7, I think, for CCFR Radio on the Air. I'm trying to make that an hour-long special on Wild TV. I'll have to see if they have the space in the schedule, if they can move some stuff around. I don't know if they can. But anyway, there's that as well. Now, I just wanted to mention before I continue, I have a couple other things I want to mention before I let you go. But I wanted to say, you know, when all this stuff with the floor crossers and the budget and everything happened, along with a few other things, and some police, you know, they're just like, yeah, I'm not willing to say no, I'm going to team up with the feds, you know, against licensed gun owners. Like, just when I see that kind of stuff, it's really difficult to keep going, right? Because if the Liberals get a majority, I don't even know what's going to happen. But I'll say this, you know, you guys all know I've done soul searching recently and it's been very difficult, but the position that I'm in is if I give up, a lot of people are going to give up. If I'm like, I have other stuff I could be doing other than, you know, running against the wall. If I give up, lots of people are going to give up. And the thing is, that's not an option. I'm not going to get into the whole thing because I've said all this stuff before, but you have no choice but to keep fighting. For me, the reason why I made that choice is even if 18 months from now, I've lost everything and we have lost completely. Number one, we would have lost all this stuff sooner if we weren't fighting this whole time. That I do believe that. And number two, if I give up now and I lose all my stuff in 18 months or 2 years or whatever, and we just lose everything, I'm going to look back and I'm going to be like, I wonder if we would have lost everything had I continued to fight for that last 18 months or whatever it was, you know? But I'll tell you this, we are going to fight right to the last day. I'm gonna do everything I possibly can do to make these people's lives miserable for doing this. Miserable in every possible legal way that I can, right to the last day. And maybe even past that too, we'll see, right? Because at the end, I will still be able to hold my head up high and say, oh, I didn't just get demoralized and then just, you know, quit 18 months ago, right? This is me at the end, quit 18 months ago and just hand the home invaders my keys, just be like, okay, just take them, you win. I'm not doing that. I don't think you should either. So that's why I'm continuing on. All right. Some other kind of cool things. Well, certainly one cool thing. You guys are probably aware that I have a hunting show on WOW TV. It's already done its 6 months run. It's called My Best Hunt. And it was a pretty good show, certainly for the first season, but it did really well on WOW TV. I think it reached beyond 1.5 million viewers. The biggest month in ratings that I had for My Best Hunt was, I think, 430,000 viewers in a month. CCFR Radio on the Air has been playing for 5 seasons, and it's a popular show. And I think our biggest month was like 200 and 220,000 or something like that. So, you know, the hunting show did really, really well. Well, all of those episodes from this past season are going up on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube, find My Best Hunt, that's the channel. There's not a lot on there, but the episodes have started going up. So I'm putting two new episodes up there every 2 weeks. So there's 13 episodes. We're in the first season. You know, the show's, I think the show's pretty good. Pretty much all the episodes I think are entertaining, but I've made huge improvements to the studio. So this is when I first built the studio. So, and it's okay, but we've made a lot of audio improvements and new lenses and all this stuff. It looks a lot better now, as you saw in those two interviews. So anyway, if you want to watch all those episodes for free, you can find them on YouTube at My Best Hunt. That's the name of the channel. And you can start watching those. There's 13 in total. And I think within the next 3 weeks, all of them will be up. All right. So you can check that out. Season two of My Best Hunt is coming, by the way. I signed for that. And that'll be coming in April 2026. Okay. I also appeared on the Sean Newman podcast. That was circulated on our social media. But if you want to go find Sean Newman's podcast, I had a really interesting talk with Sean, and Chuck Brodnick as well was there. So if you want to check out a podcast and hear kind of an interesting conversation, you can do that. If you've seen Sean Newman's podcast before, you know, it's a very popular podcast, had a lot of big people on it. And if you haven't before, you can just search for Sean's podcast. Here's what I'll do. I'll put a link to that podcast in the description box for you, so you can check that out. As well, when I had no voice at all this past weekend, I appeared on Steve Malkovich's podcast. So this is a new podcast just kind of getting launched. That episode hasn't come out yet, but you can always check. It's called the Ship of Fools podcast, where wit meets wisdom, I think is his tagline for that. And it was a really interesting conversation again, but I had no voice, but I still showed up. I had to get really close to the microphone. I'm like the whole time. But when that comes out, I'll let you know where that is. You can check that out as well if you're interested. And last, but by no means least, the Tarnak Farm incident video. It is a fantastic video to watch. Coming out Remembrance Day, November 11th. On the YouTube channel. We'll spread it all through the socials. I hope you enjoy hearing this story. It is a really engaging story to listen to, that really illustrates what guys have gone through and the little lessons, kind of a sidebar to it, and which is really Chris's connection to it, his business, is the lessons learned at the darkest times, even the small ones, impact people in the future, as long as you don't lose those lessons, as long as you learn by them. So that's sort of the recurring theme in this interview and his first-hand account of what happened in 2002. It's really, really engaging. So anyway, make sure that you watch it. If you like it, make sure you share it and get other people to watch it. It's really valuable. Okay, that's it. Sorry, 10 minutes. I did that as quickly as I could, but it was important information. Anyway, thanks everyone for watching. Share the podcast. Take care. And we will see you in episode 199 in a couple of weeks. All right. Thanks again. See you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.